Welcome to the WBFO Press Pass. I'm Mark Scott, and when it's me on Press Pass, that means it's time to hear from the editor of Buffalo Spree, Elizabeth Licata.
Hello, Mark.
You posted on Facebook the other day that you had visited the new Hotel Henry at the newly restored Richardson Complex. What did you think?
Well, it's beautiful, and it's just, well, it's wonderful to be able to walk into that structure and have it be this vibrant business with, totally redesigned and renovated. But the interesting thing, you know, it had its grand opening, I think it was April 30th. The interesting thing about it is that it retains a lot of the visual elements that it had when it was Buffalo State Psychiatric Hospital. You saw the picture I posted, and those stairs that I posted, they're actually on the door to those stairs. It says historic stair.
Okay.
So I guess explaining the fact that they've made absolutely no attempt, maybe painting, to gussy those up. They look like institutional stairs, and it's actually kind of cool. And there's lots of hallways, you know, as there must have been. And you saw, but really quite grand, you saw the one hallway where the hotel rooms were. So on the first couple of floors, you have the hotel and the restaurant. The restaurant is on the ground floor, and the 100-acre restaurant, and that seems really – and it kind of
So the
sprawls.
Restaurant is open to the
oh,
public?
Oh, it's totally – you can go there.
All
yeah,
right.
People have been going, and just for a drink if you want on a weekend because, see, that's the nice thing about hotels. They're open all the time because they're hotels. That's why it's so great to have all these new, like, patina. You know, it's open all the time. You can go there for breakfast. So it sprawls across the first floor. There's tables in the hallway, but then there's a room. And so it's interesting walking around there. It's not a traditional hotel feel.
Well, the building, it still has that foreboding feeling.
Oh, yes.
You know, because of the architecture. It is what it is.
Yes, and a lot of it, this is only a small bit of it, by the way. When you drive around, as you do, to go to the entrance, and they have valet there, you'll find that a lot of the structure, the complex, rather, is still boarded up. It's not done. This is just the hotel. To come is there are many more areas that need to be renovated. The next thing that will be opening in the winter is the architectural museum.
Yeah.
That's not its official name, but that's essentially what it will be, an architecture center to learn about architecture. And I just want to mention, you know, about the Richardson is we might be taking it for granted that it's reuse, but we should never take anything like that for granted. That structure could easily have been demolished.
Well, I wanted to point this out. It's heartening because for most of my career in radio news locally, that structure was threatened.
And oh, absolutely. It took a lawsuit, Mark.
Yeah.
As you probably know, back in 2004, there were Preservation Buffalo Niagara was, I mean, there was a many parties, including Sam Hoyt, had to sue the state. Look, this is your building. And so finally, took a couple years, but 70-some million was allocated to start the reuse and restoration of the structure. But it took a long time, and it took a lawsuit. It always takes some pretty heavy-handed actions to save these structures. And just like the Sullivan Building could easily have been demolished. There's no historic building in Buffalo where people have not fought to save it.
Yeah. Yeah. Have decisions been made about some of the outlying buildings at the complex? Because it's not all going to be the Architecture Museum. And
there are
a lot of buildings there. So is there a plan in place for these buildings yet?
The good thing about this particular complex is that there is a very hardworking board who is, you know, except now that, you know, the ball is rolling. Like, we were the first ones to go into our complex, Buffalo Spree, and it filled up pretty quickly. This is much bigger, and it's a bigger problem. But now that you have this, and a lot of people besides me are visiting and posting on Facebook, it'll come together, and it will take time, like everything.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, the Darwin Martin, that's still, that is not done.
Right, right. And I was trying to think of what's left in terms of major projects.
Well,
and it would be the central terminal.
The central terminal, by all means. That is, you know, the elephant in the room right there. And that's got to be done. And I know that people say that just, you know, restoring the terminal and putting X, Y, or Z into it certainly isn't going to save the east side. But I think it would be a very healthy step, and I think it would do a lot.
Is it a good move that the Central Terminal Restoration Corporation Board has retained the Urban Land Institute to finally
do a
study?
Yes, I think so. I think so, yeah. I think that it's important, and it does start with that, and I think that was essential with the Richardson complex as well. They retained them.
The May issue has been out for a few weeks now, so we're not going to spend a lot of time on the content, since I assume most of our listeners have already read the magazine. But in a city known for its wings, its beef on weck and hot dogs, your writers explore pork. And
yes,
obviously, we're all aware of the new love affair of bacon, but many popular local restaurants serve pork dishes.
Yes, they do it in lots of different pork. I mean, the point, I think the reason we got into it is not only just, you know, the love of bacon. And actually, I did see when I was at a conference, a city magazine with bacon, you know, that had an issue devoted to bacon, which we could have done. But I find pork more interesting because we have a famous pork farm here, Tea Meadow Farm, which raises heritage pork. So for me, it tied into the whole farm-to-table movement and using organically raised, you know, meat can be organically raised as well as you know, vegetables and so on. And I've actually been to this farm, and the pigs are running free. They're actually used to sort of clear the land because, you know, which had thistles and all kinds, you know, poison ivy. They love all that stuff. And so instead of, you know, taking a tractor, having to do that, it kind of can be a full circle where they eat and then, you know, they're sold. So they're it's humanely raised, and I think has to do with our local farm culture as well. That's what interested me. It wasn't just all about bacon.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, bacon is really cool.
And you do profile a chef who buys from the farm, who is very well known.
He's very well known, and he's known as he knows how to butcher, and he knows exactly which part of the pig can be used for what, and he tries to use 98% of the animal, which is a very sustainable way of approach. If you're going to eat meat, this is the way to do it.
Well, I actually can lay claim to savoring one of the dishes you profiled.
Oh, yeah?
The wild boar at San Marco.
Oh, yes. Well, that's been there for a while. They have been ahead of their time in really doing some very innovative dishes.
Finally, we must pay tribute to the owner of Buffalo Spree, Larry Levitt, who died a couple of weeks ago. What did he mean to the magazine?
Well, he was, I'm not going to say he was the magazine so much as he was our company, and he led us, and we looked to him. He was the spirit of the entire enterprise. And you know, as you've heard, as everyone has said, you know, his booming laugh and everything, all that, you know, and all that stuff was real. And going to work was better because he was there. And he was just a great boss and a great person.
Yeah.
And it's just a big, I mean, even though we're able, you know, and we're continuing to produce all of our products, all of our publications, which go beyond Spree, actually. We even have a Rochester Enterprise. And we know how to do that, and we've been doing it because Larry was not a micromanager. But there's still kind of this black hole because it's, you know, he's not there. It's a real loss.
Yeah.
There's no other way to put it.
I don't know if we ever met personally, but I did interview Larry on the phone on his induction into the Buffalo Broadcasting Hall of Fame back in 2003. Now, as a teen, I heard his name because I used to listen to a radio station he worked at as a salesperson, WYSL. It was a top 40 station. Then he became the general manager of WEBR right before it was sold to our parent company, Western New York Public Broadcasting. And then he bought WBEN from the Buffalo Evening News, and it was a time when WBEN was floundering. Many of its personalities, people like Clint Buhlman and Stan Barron, were let go. The station was trying to be something it was not. It was not going to be a KB-like radio station, even though they called themselves 93BEN, you know. And the Butler family, you know, they had turned it all over to managers who and really had a hands-off policy. So Larry came in and bought WBEN and restored it. He knew he had a heritage station. He brought back Clint and Stan. He hired one of the best news directors in the history of our community, Jim McLaughlin. And Jim then brought on board a young go-getter as a street reporter. And do you know who we're talking about?
Mark Scott.
No. I never had the fortune of working for him. It was Brian Meyer.
Oh, okay.
Back in 1982, both Brian and I were fresh-faced reporters in our late 20s.
Oh, that's right. Brian tells, in fact, yeah. I'm repeating some of that story in our next issue, June, which has a lot of tribute to Larry in it that people can look forward to. But yeah, I mean, BEN is really where Larry made his mark in radio, and I think it's where most people know him. And I wouldn't have been surprised to have heard that you did work for him, since so many people did.
Yeah, Michael Morosiak shared a story that he was a brand new reporter at WBEN working at night, and Larry came in to pick something up at his desk and introduced himself, and it made such an impression on this young reporter just starting out. And that says a lot about the man.
He had the same kind of office, because I've seen pictures with all kinds of stuff in it. And there was something about shrimp in the lobby that I don't really understand.
But I did see pictures that he loves stuffed animals.
Yeah, I think that, well, and for us, particularly when Spree was in more corporate office space, we sort of have a cool space now, but I think he felt that the big, and they're gigantic stuff, not just any stuffed animals that are 7-8 feet high, okay?
Yeah.
Life-size stuffed animals, life-size tigers and lions and so on. But they brought fun into the office. It was very important to him. One office, he encouraged us. We could have our walls painted, like one wall, one color, another wall, another color. He wanted us. He would say, let's put a mural here. It was very important to him that the office be a place where, if possible, you could really, enjoy working. Yeah. And he was successful. He was right. And it did make it more fun. And people love the stuffed animals.
Well, thanks for sharing.
Thank you, Mark. It's always a pleasure to talk about Larry.
Elizabeth Licata is editor of Buffalo Spree. I'm Mark Scott, WBFO News.